When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I'm Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
Both Michigan basketball teams split a pair of recent games and have matchups with top-ranked teams up next. The hockey team also split this past weekend, with both games going to overtime. We discuss all of that, plus a firing on the football staff, coming up on Wolverine Confidential. All right, guys, good to be with you both here Tuesday morning, January 24th. As I said, we've got basketball to talk about. We've got hockey games to talk about. But let's start with football. No games to talk about, but they did lose a staff member. Michigan dismissed Matt Weiss, co-offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. And Aaron, you can kind of tell us a little bit more and we can dive into what it means for this program going forward.
Yeah, word came down Friday afternoon, actually, as I was taking my nap because I was sick the last week. You didn't notice the Zook handled the story. But Matt was fired on Friday afternoon by athletic director Ward Manuel. It sounds like the decision came from the top. This maybe not necessarily was Jim's decision, but it was a department-wide decision. And it clearly it stems from the police investigation into his activities inside Schembechler Hall. As we've reported, he's under investigation by the University of Michigan Police Department for computer access crimes. We don't exactly know what that means. It sounds like the police were investigating reports of somebody hacking into email accounts. Beyond that, we don't know much. So he remains under investigation. It's important to point out at this point, Matt has not been charged with a crime. Nonetheless, he is no longer employed by the University of Michigan. Now, my understanding is he was terminated for cause. It's kind of written into each coach's contract that if you're charged with a felony or under investigation, that could severely impact the reputation of the university or of the program, you can be terminated for cause, which basically means they don't have to pay a buyout. So Matt has been terminated. He was beginning year two of his 3-year current contract. He's being paid annual salary of $850,000. He actually earned an additional $400,000 in performance bonuses based on the 2022 season. So he was handsomely paid. He will no longer be paid by the University of Michigan, leaving his future career in doubt. Going to be a very interesting time these next couple of weeks to months as we get more information on what exactly he did. Nonetheless, it was enough for Michigan to kind of give him the boot.
Did you guys have a Michigan assistant getting fired for computer crimes on your offseason bingo card?
No. As strange as offseason has been, no, I can't say that I did. No.
Yeah, Ryan and I discussed that a little bit last week. As far as we both went to Google to kind of see what that could possibly be, and it runs the gamut. I mean, I guess at this point, now that he's gone, regardless, even if he's exonerated from any of these charges, like Michigan's not bringing him back, I don't think at this point. So they have an opening on the staff. Now they have, as I mentioned, he was the co-offensive coordinator. So Sharon Moore was the other one. He'll be back. So, and Jim Harbaugh works closely with the quarterbacks. Of course, he always has. Nevertheless, again, there's just an opening on the staff. They're gonna do something with that position, whether it means reshuffling and bringing someone else in elsewhere or whatever it may be, promoting from within and then filling that spot. I don't know, but I guess what are kind of the options that are on the table here for Michigan?
Yeah, there are a lot, and it's internal names. There are familiar faces. Got folks that used to coach here. I'd say right now the front runner, especially internally, is a guy by the name of Kurt Campbell. He spent last season on staff as an offensive analyst. He was a former offensive coordinator at Old Dominion. Well-liked. He was, in a way, kind of Matt Weiss's second right-hand man, in preparing game plans and scouting opponents, everything else. They like what he did. He's a younger guy, a lot of fire and a lot of potential there. I think he's got to probably be 1A, option 1A right now. One B, I think, just from the outside perspective, Greg Roman, former OC at the Ravens. He was just dismissed. Familiar with Jim. He was offensive coordinator for Jim at the 49ers, former tight ends and tackles coach for Jim at Stanford. So I think Greg Roman, if he hasn't gotten a call by now, I expect he will get a call, at least for asking him if he's interested. And those kind of two options right there kind of show the different ways Jim can go here. Because if you do promote from within with the Kirk Campbell type guy, I think you give the offensive coordinator reins, the play calling duties solely to Sherrone Moore. I don't think you necessarily need a co-coordinator role there. Whereas if you bring in a more established name such as a Roman, then I think there's obviously an opportunity there for another coexisting co-coordinator role. And in fact, I would be surprised if Roman came in and was not given, you know, play calling duties. He would probably want those. He'd probably expect those. He probably would earn those. So it's very interesting. Other names have been thrown out there. Nick Sheridan, former quarterback at Michigan, which makes sense. He coached quarterbacks. Again, another guy you may or may not have to give play calling duties to. Interesting name that I've heard actually from folks. I don't know how serious this is, but it's an interesting name. Steve Kasula. He's the offensive coordinator right now at UMass, former analyst at Michigan. He worked with Josh Gattis, former OC at Ferris State. Again, another guy who come in and probably fill a coordinator, or excuse me, fill a quarterback coach role. Doesn't necessarily need to be a coordinator. And again, another young guy with some ties to the state of Michigan could probably help recruiting. So Jim's going to have, you know, options at his disposal. He's going to have to determine whether or not he wants an established figure who can come in and help run the offense, or a guy who can come in and maybe provide some juice from a recruiting standpoint and just kind of fill a role. Because as you mentioned, you know, he's always worked the quarterbacks. He always will. So it's a matter of who you want. Do you want a mind who can come in and help the offense as a whole? Or do you want someone who can kind of come in and play a complement and just kind of help coach the position and help the recruiting?
It's funny how nowadays that a storyline for any potential coach going from the NFL to college is how can they handle NIL and recruiting? And I feel like that would be the main thing with Greg Roman too. I mean, it's a completely different landscape than the NFL. And yeah, I mean, he might be able to run an offense and develop, but can he recruit? And I think that's the biggest potential knock on Greg Roman is recruiting. So, I mean, Campbell's been around the program. He's young. I feel like it's a young man's game right now in college football coaching. So, it will be fascinating to see which direction Michigan goes. And yeah, like Aaron said, they have quite a few potential options they could choose.
It's a good point. And remember, the last two guys they've gotten now from the Ravens, Mike McDonald, former defensive coordinator, and Matt Weiss, co-offensive coordinator, weren't regarded as really good recruiters. In fact, it seemed like they
had to stay
for recruiting. So it's a decision Jim would have to make. If he's happy with the way that things are going from the rest of the staff from a recruiting perspective, and I think there are cases to be made for both sides there. I think you can go with the old head, so to speak, the more established name. It was more of a question mark from a recruiting perspective. But again, yeah, if you want inject some life into recruiting and perhaps help on that area, you might want to go younger, someone who's already in the college game and kind of understands the landscape.
I will say this: Michigan hasn't landed not even a 4-star quarterback recruit since JJ McCarthy. So maybe getting a guy that is good at recruiting might be beneficial for the Wolverines, but we'll see.
Campbell is an offensive analyst currently. I can't remember if Aaron said that at the beginning. This was his first year at Michigan, right? Yes. So, that would be, one of those many people that are kind of in the background and not, you know, on field instruction roles, or at least not supposed to be, and recruiting roles and all that. They're now, he could be a name that could kind of move up to the actual, you know, assistant coaching staff. All right, let's talk some hoops. We can start with the men's team. I don't know. What do you guys want to know about this team?
Why should fans be paying close attention to this team right now? I mean, is there any
the coverage? The writing coverage. Is sensational. I know what you're getting at. They're kind of a. They seem like a very mediocre Big Ten team, and the Big Ten is very mediocre overall. Jawan Howard went out of his way. I asked a question about like transition offense, and his response was that they're in second place in the Big Ten, which they are. They are tied for second with Rutgers with a 5-3 record in the Big Ten. They're 11-8 overall. And, you know, even now, even the last win. So since our last podcast, you know, they went to Maryland and they lost by 6. You know, the problem there was just was defense. They could not stop the ball. Michigan, you know, Maryland just got a ton of points in the paint and at the rim, and they don't, it's not like they're throwing it into a center. They don't really have a true post presence. They were just driving past and through Michigan's defense, you know, all night. And Michigan, that was really the problem for Michigan in that game. Then, you know, they came home and, you know, seemed like the perfect opportunity to get right against, you know, a Minnesota team that only had one win in the conference. You know,
team that isn't very good. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And, you know, Michigan falls behind early and has to kind of fight back and eventually, you know, grinds out a low scoring, win, 60-56. You know, they shoot 37% from the field. They only make 2 3 pointers. But they win the game. So, I mean, you kind of look at that two ways, you know, like it was not pretty, but you know, they still found a way to win. You know, how inspiring is that, you know, going now Thursday when they host the number one team in the country, Purdue? I don't know. You know, you've heard me say on this podcast before, like home field in college basketball, like it really wouldn't shock me if like Michigan like pulled out this win. I don't expect them to be like a huge underdog in this game. It'll probably be like 6 points or something like that. But yeah, there's, you know, if Purdue plays well, Michigan's going to be in some serious trouble. But yeah, that's kind of where things stand right now for Michigan.
I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second. Because when I look across the landscape of college basketball, I see a lot of parity. Like, it's not like there's a ton of great teams. And maybe this is the case every now and then. But like this year, I mean, we just saw Houston go down the other day. Purdue's obviously the best of the league. But like, is it plausible to think that maybe the Big Ten isn't as bad as we think it is? And it's just, there's just a lot of decent teams that could beat each other on every given night. Now, look, I've watched Michigan quite a bit this year, and then I don't think they're clearly not to the level of maybe some of John Beilein's best teams. But I mean, it seems like each night, every game is competitive, whether they're playing in it or it's another Big Ten team. So like, even if the Big Ten were to get 6 or 7 teams in the tournament, whatever the case may be, this year 5, I mean, I get the vibe that, especially across the board, college basketball, that they could get a win. You know, they could get a win, could happen in any given night.
Yeah, I mean, Purdue, like I said, is number one. There's no other Big Ten team currently ranked in the top 25, but you know, there are several knocking on the door with, you know, Indiana and Rutgers, and you know, Michigan State and Illinois are getting votes. Wisconsin too. So, yeah, and then there's Michigan, you know, tied for second at 5-3 in the league. You know, they've shown that potential. Like you said, a lot of close losses, you know, two points to Virginia, you know, couple possessions against Kentucky and North Carolina. So yeah, they've got the ability. They've got a, you know, really good, you know, very good college player, you know, in Hunter Dickinson, inside, that, you know, a lot of teams don't have a player like that. And then, you know, they've got, you know, Jet Howard looks like a potential future NBA player. You know, Kobe Bufkin, like there are games where if they're, you know, popping the ball around and making some threes, they've all got players capable of doing that. You know, they can probably beat anybody, but just that consistency, you know, the defensive rebounding, the defense in general, you know, it's like the foul shooting isn't particularly good. You know, as a team, they're not great. You know, at their 3-point numbers are not great, but you know, it's they have it in them, I suppose. But yeah, it just hasn't been, it hasn't really come together. Some teams just don't quite have it. And right now this Michigan team looks like one of those. But you know, we'll see if they can turn things around and get a big chance, you know, at home against Purdue on Thursday. The Michigan women, they split since our last conversation as well. They went to Rutgers and won by 23 points. And then last night at Chrysler, I was there, they lose to number 6, Indiana, 92-83. You know, they fell behind early and were just kind of playing catch up, all night.
Yeah. You can't really do that. A team against Indiana who, only had one loss on the year.
Right. Exactly. I mean, and they are very balanced offensively. They got a dominant center in Mackenzie Holmes and then a lot of shooters around her. And that's what they did. You know, Michigan, they said after the game, they basically had a couple lapses early, let Indiana get comfortable, and then their confidence grew. And, you know, then they just started picking them apart. So, you know, Michigan made a little push. They got it to six there in the fourth quarter, but, you know, could never, you know, quite get over that hump. And even when Indiana was missing shots, they were often getting it back, and, you know, putting it in. So, defensive rebounding, a major problem for Michigan in this game, hasn't really been a problem all season. So I don't know, this was a tough one, but, like you still protecting home court is so huge, because now they got to go to number 10 Maryland on Thursday, and then, you know, a road game at Minnesota on Sunday. So, like the schedule doesn't get any easier. They still go to Indiana, you know, Wisconsin at the end of the year. Like, you know, the chance at the program's first ever, you know, Big Ten regular season title, not slipping away by any means, but, you know, Indiana, just the one conference loss, you know, Ohio State the same, you know, Iowa ahead of them in the standings. It's an uphill climb for Michigan now, especially after that home loss last night. But program still in very good shape, looking like, you know, potentially hosting an NCAA tournament game again.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron mentioned that on the men's side, the Big Ten seems to be down this year with only one ranked team. And then you look at the women, and I don't think there's ever been this many teams considered quality teams nationally, yeah, like this year. I mean, there's some, like, actually potentially national title contenders. I mean, Ohio State's number two in the country this year.
Yeah, no, well, at least Final Four contenders, absolutely. You got, you know, five of them. I mean, Michigan ranked 13 in the country. You know, and they got four Big Ten teams ahead of them in the standings. So, yeah, and Illinois ranked two. So yeah, there's definitely, on the women's side, the league is far better than on the men's side. And yes, could be, has several teams with chances of making deep tournament runs. All right, like we said, we've got some hockey to talk as well. I mean, I remember, you know, last week we were talking about how often they were just kind of splitting these, you know, series since Big Ten play began. And that was the case again, you know, this weekend at Minnesota, a 4-3 overtime loss on Friday, and a 5-4 overtime win on Saturday. But Zook, take us beyond those, you know, basic results.
Yeah. I mean, in some series, yeah, you want to sweep and you expect to sweep, but going on the road at Minnesota, the number two team in the country that has already built a pretty big lead in the Big Ten, you got to be pretty happy with the split. I mean, if you like fast transition rush teams going back, trading chances back and forth, I mean, that's what it was like this weekend. Two entertaining games on Olympic size ice, which is a little bit wider than the normal rink. And yeah, I mean, Michigan needed to come away with at least one win, and they did. They blew a late lead both games in the final 5 minutes of both games, allowing the tying goal. Lost in the final 10 seconds of overtime on Friday. But they, once again, they always seem to bounce back on Saturday and come back with a split and won pretty early into overtime on Saturday. And unfortunately, it seems like it might have come with a price. I was at practice yesterday to talk with Coach Brandon Arado, and not on the ice was Jacob Truscott, one of their top defensemen, a Vancouver Canucks draft pick, and Matthew Samuskevich, one of their top forwards, a first-round pick last year. Both were hit from behind in Saturday's game. Samuskevich did not return. Truscott was the one that scored the game-winning goal. But yeah, both were not at practice, and Nerado basically said, yeah, I don't know if they're out for a day or for the rest of the year. So he didn't really sound optimistic about their availability moving forward, and kind of the injury list just continues to grow for this team. I mean, even before the year, one of their first round picks, Frank Nazar, hasn't played at all this year, and there's no timetable for his return. They haven't been able to dress a full lineup at times this year because of either sickness or injuries. And right now they're down to 12 healthy forwards and 7 healthy defensemen on a 27 player roster, which includes the 3 goalies. So basically 24 skaters. So, I mean, they're top 10. They moved up to number 7, one spot from the previous week. And they're 6th in the Big Ten right now out of 7 teams, but they're still only 9 points away from second place. And with 3 points for every regulation win and 2 games in hand, there's definitely opportunity for them to move up. I don't think anyone's catching Minnesota, but it's been a challenging year for Coach Nerado in his first year with the program.
The the injury talk and being able to see practice reminds me, of course, that you know, Jet Howard got injured for the men in their last game and missed, you know, he came out with a couple minutes left in the first half and didn't return. Unclear what his status is going forward. We'll you know, maybe get a better answer tomorrow when we're able to talk to some players and coaches, but you know, didn't have the opportunity to stop by practice and see for myself. But okay, yeah. So what's on tap for hockey this weekend? I see they host Penn State.
Host Penn State, yeah. I mean, another quality team, number six in the country. I mean, four Big Ten teams in the top eight nationally, a very deep league this year. And yeah, I mean, and earlier in the season, at Penn State, Michigan looked awful in the opener, losing 3-0, and then won 4-3 in overtime on the following night. So again, it's this Jekyll and Hyde thing that they have on these weekend series. They come out seemingly flat every Friday, and then come back on Saturday and earn a split. I mean, since mid-November, I think they're 0-5 on Friday nights and 4-1 on Saturday nights. So it's they got to find a way to be a more complete team and come out better on the opening nights of series. But still, I mean, you can't complain about a top 10 ranking with given all the circumstances that they have had to deal with this year, even off the ice.
All right. Well, yes, for continued coverage of all these sports, MLive.com/Wolverines is your place. Thanks for listening.